Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy, Kevin Lucco. And this week is just one good buddy, because our other good buddy got himself a new job out there. So Dan Bond, the new Sioux City Explorers broadcaster. Dan, thanks for joining us again.
Yes, gentlemen. And I guess I kind of big leagued you, or at least American Association you, I guess, something like that.
Well, Dan, for fans out there that didn't know, explain, you're the new Explorers broadcaster. So tell us a little bit about how this came to be.
Oh, man. When we were talking last Monday, I had no idea that this would even happen. As a matter of fact, I even told Kevin, I may have told you too, privately, that I'd kind of resigned the fact that I was ready to go. I kind of held off on joining you guys. I thought, well, I'll wait to the very end, and then I'll be ready to go and kind of go forward and let's cover the league and do what we were doing. And when I tell you, I had no clue. I mean, no reason to believe that anything was going to happen like that. I mean, in 2013, I came in after the season started in Gary, but that was a little different situation then. It was a planned situation, and I knew that there might be an opportunity. So this is a little different. And honestly, on a Tuesday night, I'm thinking about, who knows what's going to happen. And on Wednesday, there's no inkling whatsoever on any of those nights. I mean, I really had gone with the fact that, as a matter of fact, I was preparing when I got reached out to, I was preparing for high school baseball, pardon me, and high school football. I'd actually done some work for Brad Allred to prepare our pregame show for the football in the fall at Grandview. And then I was actually working as well on my playoff broadcast for Thursday and Friday for the Grandview Zebras. And I was totally caught off guard when I was reached out to on Wednesday, Thursday, whatever it was. And I was just like totally out of the blue. And 30 hours later, I'm sitting in Sioux City in the broadcast booth watching the rain come down. I mean, it was just real crazy. I mean, it was basically, when I say 36 hours from, possibility to where we're at, I mean, it's less than 36 hours. It's 24 hours. I mean, it was less than that. I mean, I'm doing the math in my head that it was really one of those deals. I mean, I literally all week, and it's funny because it was Mother's Day, and my wife and I had made plans for Mother's Day. We had weekend plans and all that, and really, Thursday morning, I'm scrambling around going, wait, this might happen, and it did. And I'm Thursday afternoon, I got to drive down to Whitney, Texas, which is about 20 miles from Waco, and I'm thinking, how am I going to get to Sioux City tomorrow for a game in less than 24 hours? And that's how fast it happened. When I say 24 hours, and literally it was 36 hours from the broadcast on Saturday to when I found out on Thursday. So, I mean, when I say 36 hours, that's 36 hours for them finding out to go on the air, 24 hours or less, actually 20, I guess I got there in 27 hours, something like that. So crazy, crazy week. And you just never know how life's going to work out and what's going to happen. So it's a long story, but, it's a blessed thing. I'm still floored. I'm still sitting here in Iowa with my suitcase unpacked and still thinking, what in the heck just happened? Because this time last week, you and I, we were all talking about the season, and I looked at the Sioux City roster, but we studied it a little bit, but and now I'm here studying it big time. I'm learning these guys on the fly. So just a crazy week. I mean, you just never know what a week will hold. And you wake up on a Thursday and you think you have no idea you're going to be broadcasting in 24 hours, and that's exactly what happened. Crazy.
Did you look around when you got the phone call and just wondered, okay, is there a hidden camera somewhere? Am I being pranked here? What is going on?
Well, that's exactly right. The habit you get in this business, especially when you work as a media person as well, not just a play-by-play, but even play-by-play guys, you work sort of, you get a lot of spam calls anyway in life, right? But I wind up answering all these calls because you just never know when it might be a media person. And that's going to happen today. Somebody called, I saw a number today from California. Turned out it was a young reporter here in Sioux City wanting to come out and interview Steve Montgomery. So you answer those calls, and I sat there for a moment going, all right, what scam am I getting scammed on here? I'll answer anyway, because usually it tells you spam. Well, this one didn't say spam. I thought, Okay, I'll answer it. And as a job seeker, you know, you're always going to answer the phone. But I had not sent any. I'd sent no resumes to Iowa. I'd sent no tapes to Iowa or anything. Or I guess I won't send tapes anymore. But no MP3s or any links or anything. So I was sort of totally shocked by the whole thing.
I know. I was
at. Point out, Dan. Go ahead, Kim. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to point out I was at dinner with Brad Allred and Tanner Hoops in Sioux Falls, and the conversation kind of went like this. You know, Brad says, "Kevin, have you heard from Dan Vaughn?" I said, "Well, I haven't heard from him, and he hasn't done much on social in the last day or so. I hope he's all right." I could just, you could just see Brad's face light up, and he just goes, "Oh, he's more than all right." But I'll let him give you the news. I just remember that line when he just said, "Oh, he's more than all right."
Yeah, well, the thing was is that, you know, Brad and I would do the high school games together, and we had to, knowing that I had to find a replace, you know, somebody to cut me, I couldn't just, they had a game on Friday, a high school game, and Sioux City had a game on Friday, and it turns out it got rained out. But, you know, I just felt like I needed to let Brad know. He's been so good to me, thought a lifeline as well. And so I had to let him know and say, "Look, here's the situation. Now, this has come up out of the blue." And he's like, "You know, mate, you gotta do what you gotta do." I mean, I totally get it. He's like, "We'll find somebody to cover Grandview. I want you in the league if you're gonna be in the league." And so it was one of those things that he did message me. He's saying, you better tell Kevin, because I'm sitting right across from him. I gotta tell you, you gotta say something to Kevin, because he's sitting right across from me. I can't hold a secret any longer." So finally I said, "All right," because I didn't want to say anything, because I didn't know it, you know, it hadn't been officially announced yet, and I wanted to make sure it was, you know, until the next morning, and I went and announced it the next morning. So, yeah, crazy that it happened like that.
I do want to say, Dan, that your explanation of how many hours there were between you getting the word you were getting the broadcast and actually getting on the air provided more math than Kevin and I have ever had on the show combined. Well, so I just want to point out, you add a little
math.
And
I'm not a math guy either, but I remember sitting there counting in my head, because I'm thinking 24 hours ago, I was clueless, and then I had to add the extra time to it, because we went on earlier, so it was about 36 hours. Technically, when I added it up, it was actually more like, see, I'm confusing myself. It's like 38 hours, for crying out loud, from Thursday to Saturday. Wasn't quite 48. It was close.
Well, that is a great story. And, you know, to make that story even better, you go up there to Sioux City, you're team, your new team faces off against your old team, winds up sweeping and getting maybe the best pitching performance in three games I think I've ever seen in this league. You had to be pretty excited about how your Explorers look.
Yeah, and the thing about it is what's really weird is that we did a little talk. We talked about the team, and we talked about it last week, but, you know, I didn't really know what to expect, because I hadn't done any prep at all. I'm still trying to play catch-up. So just the fact that they did what they did, A, the offense was very efficient. The pitching was outstanding. They didn't make – I think they made one error all weekend, I believe, maybe two. You know, there was a lot of wheels. There was a great defensive play. So a lot of really good baseball played by Sioux City with defensively, offensively. And when you're throwing strikes and retiring folks like you were, it made it so much easier to kind of settle in. But, it was fun. I mean, there was some little irony there, I guess, not going to lie, sure, I was glad that Sioux City won all three ball games. I don't think anybody had that as a possibility. And the fact that it was, beating Kansas City is a big deal. I have uttermost respect for Joe Capietra and that staff, and Bill Sobey and John West and Frank White. I mean, they're all dear, dear people I care about, and just, you can't not be close to him, and it was so great to see him. But at the same time, to win that game was in all three games is huge. And I'm not going to lie, the irony's not lost to me. And as I told you guys when we went on the air, there are no accidents, and I think there was a reason why it all went that way.
Looking at that series, I want to talk specifically about Sunday, because it looked like Kansas City had an opportunity to come up with several runs in that contest, but a number of fantastic plays in the outfield were just really took the lifeblood out of the Monarchs to get back into that contest and come away with a victory. I'll be honest with you, I was very impressed with the defense for this Sioux City Explorers Club. I know Steve Montgomery is kind of known for that, but this might be one of the better outfielders in the league right now, but at better outfield groups.
Yeah, Yuri Perez made two great plays, and Degner made a third and would have negated the last play in left field. That was, I believe, in the eighth inning. But really where the whole thing – well, there's also a great play in the – that was the seventh inning, I believe. Eighth inning was a play actually, there's two great plays in the eighth inning. I forgot to play at third as well. But the air kind of came out of Kansas City, I thought, the first inning. Then the bases loaded. And John Hernandez, who is one of my favorite people – not only is he a phenomenal player, one of my favorite people I've ever met in this game. He's just a gem. And he's up to the bases loaded, and there's one bases loaded and nobody out. You're going to lay money on that being a pretty good situation. If you're a Monarchs fan, you're like, this is about to get good. If you're a Sioux City fan, you're going, oh, no, this is trouble early. Well, what happens? He bounces into a 4-6-3 double play. And he's got good speed too. And that, you know, they scored a run on it, but that was it. That pretty much, you know, that was their offense of the day. And they had those opportunities later on. The fly ball playing left by Yuri Perez was a phenomenal play as well. There was a play at third. But again, you know, it was one of those situations where, you know, that really kind of set the tone. And eventually, against a really good arm too in Santa Bria in the ninth inning, you know, Sioux City got it done. But yeah, it was. I really thought that game on Sunday turned in that first inning. I mean, I sat there the rest of the way thinking, okay, and as Kansas City continued to not score, I knew it was a matter of time before I felt Sioux City would score at least one and sure enough get two.
You know, those of us that follow the league, we all know the guys like the Nate Gherkins and the Wilfredo Jimenezes, the guys that have been in this league for a while. Messaging with you last night, I know what your work day consisted of today, so you should be well equipped to answer this question. Tell us a little bit about who we should expect to see emerging as the stars on this Explorers ball club.
Well, I think it all starts at the number one spot in the order. I mean, Chase Harris is one of the faces of this league. You know, we talk about players that are facing this league. There are handfuls of them out there. You know, we think I mentioned Yonder Hernandez a moment ago, you know, guys like that. He's one of those guys. You know, you think of a Nate Sampson who's been around this league a long time. Those are facing this league. And Chase Harris is just like that. He, you know, Phillies farm end years ago, came to Lincoln for a short time, then goes, really makes a name for himself in Gary. And then he has just been phenomenal here in Sioux City. He is the steadying force up top. He's got, you know, he can do a little everything. He can hit for power, get on base, and his defense is phenomenal. In the number two hole, Vincent Fernandez, who had seven RBIs over the weekend, this is a guy that, you know, I hope that he is in the league a long time, but I wouldn't be shocked if he wasn't. This guy is an RBI machine, you know, played at AAA last year for the Athletics in Las Vegas, Giants farmhand. He is a guy that you look at. And you look at his pedigree, he's the kind of guy that should do really well in this league, and he's a really heck of a nice young man. Got a chance to interview him yesterday. A funny story here about him, it was Mother's Day, and he asked me about it, and he talked to his mom, and he said, she didn't answer the phone three times, and I said, she big leagued me. She said, yeah, my mom big leagued me. It was a fun conversation we had on the broadcast. But those two, Daniel Perez and Yuri Perez, you know, first baseman Daniel Perez was phenomenal over the weekend as well. He's a really interesting young man who was born in Cuba. And then Wilfredo Jimenez, if you're building a team up the middle, right? Well, you got a phenomenal catcher in Wilfredo Jimenez, another face of the league, Chase Harris in center. And I think that the interesting thing is I didn't know a lot about Kyle Kasser at second base, but he seems to have a little pedigree as well. And, you know, it's funny because we were talking last week, and I said this on the broadcast, you know, the names didn't jump out at me. But once I pulled back the layer and kind of did some research, I started going, wait. This guy's got a little something. I mean, it's like yesterday looking at the numbers, you know, going in to, yesterday I was talking about Austin Drury, a guy I didn't know much about at all, but he had been a phenomenal reliever and a four-pitch guy that, you know, I didn't know anything about, but you go up and see what he did yesterday, you're thinking this guy can be a really good piece of the rotation. I mean, once you do the research, and sometimes you get a name, you know, a name in the league, you know, you're like, well, that team, and that's what, you know, like I use Yonder Hernandez as an example. That's no doubt the kid can play, but, you know, I didn't know anything about, you know, Vincent Fernandez or Yuri Perez, and these guys got a little something. I tell you what, Steve's done with his pitching staff too, and that's where the headline. I mean, Solomon Bates, is a guy that has got starting staff material, ace material for this league. He's a, you know, one of those kind of guys. He's also a really, really good young man that really folks really enjoy getting to know. And then you see him roll out there. And then, of course, the pitcher of the week this week, you know, coming from Sioux City as well, and that being Mitchell Verbrugge. And Verbrugge, young man, also played a lot of college baseball there, and just a machine in college. He was one of those guys that got a little injury time. Actually, well, not really injury time. COVID year, he also redshirted. So he winds up being in college for 6 years, but only plays four of them. He was phenomenal yesterday. I mean, allowed one hit. Or, I'm sorry, Saturday, one hit, and was just lights out. He retired eight in a row. Then he retired seven in a row. I mean, this is a deep pitching staff. In the bullpen, you mentioned Nate Gerken, and there's a lot of guys we hadn't seen yet. I can tell you Steve Montgomery is excited about his pitching staff, and that's what he's always done. You know, Montgomery does what I've said this all the time I've been in this league. He just grabs as many arms as he can get. He will stack those arms down there, and he'll kind of shuffle them out. You know, it may be a situation where, like, Bates last year was more of a reliever. He winds up being a starter this year. He just, you get as many arms as you can, you sort out who pitches where later. And that, to me, is kind of the nutshell version of the Sioux City ball club. And I think you're going to really like watching this ball club in general.
Now, Dan, in the last few seasons, Sioux City has usually gotten off in May in very tough starts that have put this team really in a hole to begin. You got to watch that from the opposite booth over the last few years there. But they sweep Kansas City. You have Lake Country come to town now for a few games before traveling to Kane County. You go to Sioux Falls, and then you have Lincoln coming to town. All three of those teams are kind of struggling right now. This looks like it has the table is kind of set for Sioux City here to really have a good May.
You know, and I look at things, too, in this league on the travel end of it as well. I mean, yeah, it's not the main factor, but I look at what this club has got coming up forward as far as travel-wise. You've got to go to Kane County, you know, for the weekend. You're going to come back home and go to Sioux Falls, but that's a commuter trip. So you're not doing a two-city swing. You're going to, you know, yes, you're going back and forth during the day, but it's a 70-mile drive. I made it the other day from the airport in Sioux Falls. It's not a big deal. Then you come, and then you've got that home series, as you mentioned, and then you're going to hit to end of the month to Cleburne. I think that's, if you can get to Cleburne and, you know, get down there for that Cleburne series and in some, you know, a handful of games above 500, maybe five or six, I think you've got a really good chance to really get yourself positioned for a really good run the rest of the summer. I think it's a really good schedule travel-wise, and I think you're right schedule-wise, just as overall opponent-wise. And it's early, of course. I mean, I said today in another interview here locally that we're so early in the season, the alarm went off. We've kind of pulled the covers off. I didn't put our slippers on yet. That's how early the season is. But early going, like the sun's shining in.
Now, speaking about Kansas City here for a moment, I understand that the pitching was fantastic for the Explorers, and I know you're touting that, and you should be. But, man, seven total hits for the Monarchs this weekend, not a single extra base hit. Were you stunned at what you saw as they were really trying to put some kind of offense together?
A little bit, but I also know that, you know, there's some challenges there, you know, in Kansas City's case. You know, they played that three-game series with the Savannah Bananas. Now, I know Joe Capietta told me that most of his guys got a lot of action there. They had those three ball games, but, you know, when you're playing those kind of exhibition games, it's hard to really work on the things you need to work on. I know that he got the work in. They didn't hurt him last year playing those two exhibition games where most of those guys only had one or two at-bats, but he tried to get those guys more time. But I just think it's a situation for them where, you know, A, familiarity with the league, B, you know, just, you know, getting out the gate slow. Those two things were a factor. You know, there's one thing I've always heard Joe tell me is in this league is you never know how a young man is going to react coming to indie ball, right? And you never know when a guy who was the big star out of high school goes to, you know, affiliate a ball or whatever and eventually gets released. You never know how that affects a player, right? You never know if that's going to be, you know, coming to the indie ball, is that going to hurt their psyche? Is that going to help their psyche? How they adjust? Because it's not for everybody. And you wonder how much, you know, are there too many new faces? I just throw those ideas out there, but I think they're going to be fine. As a matter of fact, Mongo and I were talking today. It's like, you know, we caught him at the right time. We caught him at the right time because they're going to hit a lot. And you know they're gonna be dangerous, especially in that ballpark of theirs at Legends Field. They'll be lethal. So you know I think it's a blip on the radar. I was shocked, yes, just because of the guys I knew on that ball club, Hernandez and Jacob Robson. Those two guys have just been, you know, just in the short time for Jacob, he's been outstanding. And of course, you know what Jan does. But yeah, it was a little shocking, but I think they're gonna be fine.
Did you even have time to think, boy, if I was on the other side of the broadcast booth still calling us for the Monarchs, I would have been pretty frustrated at some point on the weekend.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would be very, would be remiss if I didn't say that. You know, I mean, you want to win, and, you know, you would love to win a series, and, you know, you get, you know, basically, I mean, Saturday wasn't close at all, pretty much. I mean, after the first inning of game one, it was Sioux City's Saturday, no doubt about it. Then yesterday, the frustration with a big league arm, a guy that's going to throw, got great velocity, and winds up being a blown situation there. Not a save, but a late inning loss. Sure, I think it'd be frustrating in the broadcast booth. Anytime you get swept is not fun, and I can tell you too. I've been on that short end of the stick here before as a visitor being swept, and it ain't fun getting swept here. I can tell you that right now. It's that the fans are right on you. You know, you can hear everything, and you're right there, and it's not fun. I got to admit that it's not fun.
What's your first impressions when you're looking at Sioux City fans as, like, your fans now? I guess to me, it's no secret the team is not drawn, but
yep.
The fans are there. They're very into it. Is that your early impression?
Yeah, absolutely. They're diehards. And the thing about it is, this is the thing that we're sort of talking about a little bit today. And this is sort of what you've got here. And this is really one of the things that I'm really looking forward to trying to be a part of. But, Tom Backmire is the GM, who's brought a new GM here. I think a guy you're going to really like. He's a guy that's been in this business 20-some-odd years. This is not a first rodeo for him. He's been in some phenomenal places as far as, you know, especially on the West Coast, places like Everett, you know, which was a really solid operation there in the Northwest League. But, you know, we and I were talking about this today. You know, we got a lot of fans here that you'll talk to at, say, at a restaurant or store who say, oh, yeah, I've been to a game since 2015. And I think there was a slight, small disconnect, and I think we're on the right track getting those people back, because they're like, you know what, I got to get out there again. And I was at the radio station today on the morning show, and a lot of positive response there. And we got to, you know, this is a situation here that's a small town has its advantages, a lot like Cleburne. There's a lot of advantage to be the only game in town, and really you are the only game in town, you know, this time of year. And I you know, it's, you know, you got to, you know, beat writers, the TV stations were all there, and, you know, I can't tell you the last time I dealt with a beat writer. I mean, it's been a long time since Gary. And it's a definite advantage being a smaller market. But I think the big thing is just getting those fans who all know the Explorers, but getting them to come back out again. And I think that's one of the fun things we'll do, because the diehards are there. They are knowledgeable fans. They know what they're talking about. And, you know, they remind me of the folks in Winnipeg, who I think are just phenomenal baseball fans. They remind me of those folks. They know the game. They know when to make the noise. And I just think it's going to be a little time to get them back. But I think what Tom's going to do, and John Roos, the owner, is just, he's committed to winning. He's committed to the city. He's committed to this area. And his energy and spirit and passion is contagious. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. I will also mention one more thing, too, that's not lost on me here. Obviously, Tom and I are older. We've been around a while. Between us, we've got about 39 years of experience in this business. But all the staff here are very young, and this is their first rodeo. They have no frame of reference. So, you know, it's fun to work with these young kids and get them involved and get their passion as well, because they're the ones that are going to make a difference to get those other youngsters out and supporting the Explorers down the road.
Talking about those fans, Dan, you know, you built up kind of a way that you broadcast games where you interact with fans during the games and talk with them over the Mixlr chat or through Facebook or Twitter. Do you see doing those same kind of broadcasts in Sioux City, or does that just not, the setting doesn't really facilitate for that?
Oh, it'll be very much what I've always done. There won't be a lot of differences. The history is here. You know, I do miss the Negro League Museum history. We had such tie in there in my time in Kansas City. But you're gonna, you know, there's so much history here. I've been with the going back to the turn of the last century. We'll be doing a lot of that. The chat will be up eventually. We're gonna somehow work it out. I'm not sure how, but we, you know, we've got a radio deal. We're so happy to be on KSCJ here. A phenomenal group of folks over there. But, yeah, there'll be interaction, and it'll be very – I don't know how much of a chat we'll have. I hope we get a chat up, but at the moment we're still trying to kind of feel our way out. You're going to see the social media, as a matter of fact. At some point coming up in the next few days, we'll be launching our show during the daytime on Facebook and YouTube, and we're going to grow our YouTube presence, and we're going to be calling the show Explorers Espresso, or Espresso with Explorers, one of the two. Explorers Espresso, I believe, is what we're going to go with. And so you heard it here first, Explorers Espresso. Have a cup of coffee and talk Explorers and get fans engaged there as well. So we're doing those conversations, and we'll be doing that. So you'll hear that, and you'll see that. And a lot of the same things I've done before, Gary, and in Kansas City will be done the same way. And there'll be some additions. There's some things you can do with a brick-and-mortar radio station that you can't do always online. And I think things like perhaps looking into a possible studio type show kind of thing, that will probably be something we can work into the broadcast, where you hear scores from the studio and things like that, and running highlights with more ease that we haven't been able to do before. So those are all in the works as we go forward.
Now, you've come into situations where you're entering a team. You talked about Gary. You're entering a little bit into the season. Greg Taggart had been there for a while. You're getting to know him. You're getting to know Joe Calfapietra as he becomes the manager for the T-Bone/Monarchs. You've known Steve Montgomery for a long time. I would gather that's making this job a little more enjoyable when you and the manager already have a relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been great. And what's been fun, too, and this has just happened the last day and a half, he and Bobby Post both have come in to where I'm kind of hanging out in the conference room doing some work, and they've chatted with me and getting to know, I know Steve, I didn't know Bobby, but I didn't, now I know. The fun thing is I get to fast forward where the relationship with Greg and Joe were brand new. I didn't know them from anywhere, and I didn't know anything about them. But I know Steve, I know what he's about. We've talked over the years, we've text back and forth, and now I'm able to kind of talk more about, things that I would not have learned in, with Joe and Greg, it took me maybe 4 or 5 months to know the kids' names or whatever. I'm not just doing that as an example, but I met Steve's son was here over the weekend, met his wife, and we were talking today. And it's fun because we were chatting there in the office, and his daughter calls and is asking about the team and things like that. So I felt like I already knew him, and now I'm getting to know him little quicker that I have anywhere else. So it's a real plus, and that's a huge deal. And I knew John, John Roos, the owner, as well. And so those are all pluses. And then the press box crew, I would even throw those guys in, like Jamie Miller, who's an official score, and Mike Peck, who does the Daktronics board. That crew up there I've known, and just known them over the years, and known that, what they do, and just coming here. Heck, I've probably called 50 ball games here over the years. Katie Brewer, who's also works upstairs, I've known her for years. And so I'm new here, but I'm familiar here. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, now that you've had a chance, at very short time now being on this side of the Explorers locker room, so to speak, out here, how are you finding that experience now, being the Sioux City guy?
Oh, I'm excited. I'm so fired up. I'll tell you a story from years ago when Dave Nitz was here. Now, Dave and I became – Dave was the former play-by-play man here and law tech legend, baseball and play-by-play legend. Well, he and I kind of crossed paths years ago, and I met Shane Tritz, who was the old GM, now the GM at Lincoln, a dear friend of mine. I met him down at the American Association General Managers meetings down in 2000 and maybe 11, something like that. And I was out of the game, but I was trying to get back in. I'd be a year from going to Australia. And Shane and I were chatting, and he goes, I might have an opening, But I'm like, no. Well, remember, Dave would always say to folks every year, what's my last year, right? He would always, from like 2011, 12, 13, 14, Dave was always going to be his last year. And finally, he did retire to the 2018 season, I believe it was, in 17 season, and Connor came in. But I always thought, you know, I'd always have my stuff ready to send or call Shane and say, hey, I'm ready to come to Sioux City. And every time it'd be, oh, I'm sorry, Dan, Dave's coming back this year. And I got that message like, you know, 5 straight years that Dave was coming back. And to finally be here is really a cool experience. And I'm just fired up. I mean, it's a historic place, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
That's a pretty good lineage when you think about the broadcasters going from Dave Nitz to Connor Ryan, who I thought did a superb job in his 5 years in the club. And then now you take over the reins, being the true pro you are. And, you know, I'd say the Sioux City fans are lucky to have you on board.
Well, I appreciate that. It's very kind of you, Kevin, and you know how much I care about you and you and Rob both. And it's a really great, it's again, I'm still kind of dreaming and you know, I don't know if this is going to be, you know, what's going to hold for on the field, but I'll tell you, we're going to have a great time in the booth, and it's going to be an experience. And I think that I've already, you know, grown to love this bunch. And I'll tell this story too, because this will kind of put it on the perspective. I think when I got, you know, the thumbs up, I got a phone call from, you know, John and Steve, and you know, that to me meant a lot, that they were excited to have me and they welcomed me with open arms. I mean, how many times does a manager call and say, well, I'm glad you're going to be coming to broadcast our games? Most of the time, you know, I'm not saying the guys don't care, but they got things to worry about. But Steve loves this Explorer Club. He loves this town. He loves this brand. And his passion is the same kind of thing, that a level as I have. John, same thing. John Roos is as passionate as a guy out there. I mean, he wants to win, wants his team to do well. And he has poured his heart and soul and is walled in this operation over the years. And you can't help but be fired up and want to do well, because they want you here. And they made that call. And, you know, obviously, Tom, the GM as well, was, you know, wanted me here too. And Tom and I are both in year one here. So we both felt the passion. You could feel it here in town. And that really meant a lot to me. Then I guess the closing thing is when Steve and I were chatting, he says, welcome to the dark side. And so it's like, we're like, we got a kick out of it. Because, you know, I was on the other side of the rivalry for so long. Kansas City and Sioux City have a huge rivalry. And now, you know, I'm on the other side of it. And it was a really good conversation. I knew then that I was in the right place.
Well, think about this, guys. It would be like John Sterling leaving the Yankees booth to go broadcast for the Red Sox.
Absolutely. Absolutely it would be. I mean, it's exactly what it would be like. And, you know, it, this business, it happens. I think, you know, the one thing that I've always said, you guys know this, you can't travel with these guys, get in the bus, get to know them, and watch them, you know, go through ups and downs and not have some kind of allegiance to them and watch the work they do. You know, watching Joe's work over the years there in Kansas City and watch what Greg did, you can't help but have a special place in your heart for him. And you see these things happen, and you want to support them. And it's, you know, anybody tells you, and there are guys who tell you this, and I think they're full of, you know what? Well, I'm a journalist. Well, yeah, you're telling a story. Yeah, I'm not a homer. Well, that's fine. That's your style. But I'm telling you, you don't have much of a heart if you don't have you don't care about a kid's well-being, if he's getting released or he gets signed, or you know, if he's getting married, or you know, whatever the case may be. I mean, you couldn't help it. I'll tell you what. I'll give you a piece of the puzzle here. You know, Chase Harris is a guy I've known, you know, back when he was in Gary, and we, you know, I really liked him a lot. Now I've watched him grow as a player, but also as a man. He's married now, has a young son that's 7 months old. He's carrying his young son around during the rain delay on Friday. I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, you get to see a young man grow, and you can't help but be caring about those folks, and you can't help but be fired up about it. I mean, that's just the kind of thing this league and this experience. He is a broadcaster, even changing brands. You can't help but be attached to these people and watching them grow. So, yeah, it's a little hard to think of going to the rival, but at the same time, you know, it happens all the time in sport, and you dive in and you use your passion and you try to do the best you can do.
Well, Dan, I'm happy to hear that Steve was, you know, reached out to you right off, was excited about having you come to Sioux City. But I got to ask, because I've known Steve a long time, a guy I really love greatly, but usually sees the negative side of things. So when you said, hey, by the way, I picked you guys to win the championship, how did he take that?
Well, honestly, when he called me, I thought, when he called me to tell me congratulations, I thought he was calling me to get on me because I picked Sioux City to win on Monday, 4 days earlier. And I thought that was, I said, you're not mad at me because I picked, he goes, no, congratulations. He's like, no, he laughed about it. He said, yeah, those guys always pick us and we always, you know, I don't know why they always jinx us, but he goes, I'm not worried about that with you. So it's all good. But I really thought when he called me, I was like, and he called me on Thursday, I'm like, I picked the team because I believe I was going to do, but that was my thought. You were going to build a great team with some emotion. And sure enough, he was calling to congratulate me. So there's that.
Well, that is fantastic, Dan. Kevin and I are super excited for you. And we're even more excited because you get to give us another great final thought for tonight.
Well, I'm going to tell you, as a man of faith, there's no accident, okay? And there's no accident that where I wound up on Friday or really Saturday on the air. I mean, you know, there's someone watching out for us all. And I always talk about being better and showing more love the next day. And I think that's an example right there that, you know, this wasn't a fluke. There was a reason behind it. And, you know, I'm not trying to be the preacher here, but I just really believe that if you have faith, hope, and love, and you just use those as your guide, eventually things will happen. And I'm very thankful for the opportunity, and I'm just thankful my wife and I, who we're just so excited about this opportunity. And, again, I'll leave you with this. There are no accidents.
That's fantastic. Dan Vaughn, thanks for joining Kevin and I this week.
Yeah, thanks for doing this, Dan.
Appreciate you. Appreciate y'all, as always.
Well, Kevin, great having Dan on the show. And, you know, you and I are obviously huge Dan Vaughn fans, and great to see him where he belongs in the American Association.
I guess, you know, for the interview segment, I guess the new three-man team stuck together. So we're gradually getting it back down where it's just you and I again.
We had to wean us off slowly, I guess, is the way to look at this out there.
Can't go cold turkey.
Exactly. Well, Kevin, let's talk about a lot of stuff going on around the American Association with the first weekend of games getting underway. And let's begin with our player and pitcher of the week. Both the American Association and here at This Week in the Association, we agree that Zach Narrier, the player of the week, Cleburne was unbelievable this weekend, and Sioux Falls, and Zach led the way for them.
No doubt about it. I, you know, as we'll get into when we talk about our pitcher of the week, after opening day on Thursday, I was genuinely surprised that they had been shut down pretty easily, but boy, the bats, and frankly, let's be honest, the eyes of the plate were good, and boy, they just put runs up by the bushel load, and right in the middle of it was the guy that anyone that follows the league knows very well, and Zach Narrier.
Hits .467 during the week, has back-to-back three-hit, four RBI games on Friday and Saturday, finished with 11 RBI for the weekend, leading now the American Association, walked seven times in that series. Wasn't bad enough, he had seven hits, but he walked seven times as well, had two home runs. Just a phenomenal week for Zach out there. And as you mentioned, a guy that has continuously produced, and I'm impressed because, you know, he had that very difficult 2020 season when he was with Milwaukee during the COVID year, returns back to Cleburne, and every year since then, his numbers have gotten more impressive. Definitely a guy who looks like he's getting better with age.
That speaks well on Narrier, too, to the struggle like he did during 2020. But mind you, he was the MVP of the Miles Wolf Cup in 2020. So he did have a good series there to help the Milkmen win the championship. But, you know, a lot of guys might have said, well, boy, that was an off year. Maybe it's time to move on. But not for Narrier. He came back and came back with a vengeance.
The pitcher of the week, Sioux Falls Canaries starter Akeem Bostic, the one guy for Sioux Falls that really pitched extremely well for this club. Now, I think it's important to note, and I mentioned this in the article when we selected him, is that he didn't have the best statistics of all the starters out there. But, you know, Kevin, we always consider the situation that the guy is in, and Bostic definitely proved that he was the pitcher of the week.
I looked at it as the guy economized his pitches well. Yeah, he didn't have the gaudy strikeout numbers, but he was getting the Canaries off the field back onto the bench. And he gave the Canaries 21 outs. And frankly, with the state of their bullpen, as we saw it on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, that was huge, that they only had to get two innings out of their bullpen, that Bostic was able to go out there, get them 21 outs, and get them into the eighth inning with a lead against a very good team in Cleburne. So I just thought the whole body of work from the innings up to holding them to, I believe it was just two solo home runs were the extent of the offense for Cleburne, that Bostic did everything that the Canaries could have possibly have asked for. And that's why he got my vote.
Yeah, Bostic gives up one run in seven innings. After that, over the remaining 29 innings of that series, Cleburne scores 47 runs, I believe. It was 46 runs out of that. It was something totally crazy. And you just think in comparison to that, this was just an offense that was unreal all weekend long, but they had no answers against Akeem Bostic. And that earned a lot of respect from me, because that's clearly going to be the lineup that's going to be one of the top one or two in the American Association this season. And when you can limit them to just one run in seven innings, that's saying a lot. So congratulations to Akeem. As Dan mentioned, the American Association going with Mitch Vervick, who allowed one hit in five innings in the victory over Kansas City. We don't have any argument with that. He pitched very well. We just went with a guy situational. You got to like what Akeem did. And good to see, you know, he always been a guy who's pitched pretty well here in the American Association. And good to see he's looking like somebody that Sioux Falls can depend upon this season.
No doubt. You know, he scrapped quite a bit for Kansas City last year after, I believe, the year before he had time in the major leagues with the Mets. But I'm sure that probably stuck with Bostic as he came back to the American Association, that he feels like he has something to prove, and he did a good job of doing that on opening day for the Canaries.
Let's talk about a few milestones, Kevin, before we go around the league and look at some of the team action this week. Lincoln Salt Dogs mentioning that Nate Sampson reaching his 1,400th, if you want to say it that way, career game on Sunday. So Nate's been a guy who's been a true professional. Glad to see that he's reaching that kind of mark for longevity.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, a pro's pro. I can remember, heck, even, I can't remember if 2019, was he one of the guys that was mic'd up during the All-Star game?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, so we got to see the on-field Nate Sampson a bit there, and the guy's just been a warrior throughout the years. You know, the numbers last year probably weren't what he wanted them to be with Sioux City, but he got another chance with Lincoln, went there, and proved to be a steadying influence, and I don't see that being any different this year, as Sampson will be one of the cornerstones of the South Dogs lineup.
We mentioned Zach Narrier earlier. He also reached his 400th career RBI as a professional. So congratulations to Zach out there. And tonight, as we're watching Fargo taking on Winnipeg, they raised the championship banner here. Kevin, exciting time in Fargo. Good crowd out here looking to enjoy tonight as the Redhawks winning tonight's game, and got to enjoy seeing the team dubbed as the official American Association champions.
What I want to know is, in watching the game, how did Hawkeye get like a custom-made American Association championship belt? That looked pretty impressive.
Yeah, that is pretty cool looking. I do agree with you that. That's fantastic. Well, Kevin, let's jump around the league here a little bit and talk about this past weekend's games. And there's a few teams really that jump out to me here, and we'll start with Cleburne. So they struggle on opening night, get two runs against Bostic and that Canaries bullpen, and then just go absolutely ballistic over the next three games. And it is Ryan Hernandez homers three times in that series. The rookie has looked absolutely fantastic. We talked with Brad a couple weeks ago. He was stunned that this young man was not drafted and sitting in affiliate ball. And, boy, he sure made Brad look smart this weekend.
No doubt. You know, I was out there on Thursday afternoon and I'm doing a little color commentary with Brad during the game, and he couldn't say enough good things about Ryan Hernandez. And, boy, oh, boy, you know, his first four games as a professional, he's cranked out three home runs. That's, I told Brad, he's either going to be a candidate for Rookie of the Year or he's going to be a signee. So we'll see what happens with Ryan Hernandez. But, boy, if he can continue like this, and if he's a guy on your roster as a rookie, that's a true find. If you got someone that fills on those rookie spots that can also produce like he has thus far, that's huge.
47 runs Cleburne scores over the weekend. They hit nine home runs, walked 39 times in that series. That's bad news for Sioux Falls, as we'll come back to. But a number that kind of leapt out at me, I understood most of these came on Sunday as they had six stolen bases, but leading the American Association in stolen bases with 10, Kevin. And I think this says a lot about what you're going to see from this Cleburne team this season. I think Logan Watkins is not going to be happy with just believing his hitters are going to deliver home runs. He's going out to scratch out runs and to really put pressure on opposing defenses.
Well, when you look at the guys in the lineup, it's a very athletic ball club. There's not, let's say, a guy like a Matt Adams that's going to crank out 25, 30 home runs, but you know once he's on first base, he's going to be a station-to-station guy. It's a team with some pretty darn good athletes on it, and you know, one guy that I singled out that I think is going to be, if he plays the entire season with the Railroaders, is going to have a huge year is Hill Alexander. I just felt last year when he jumped on board with the Railroaders that it seemed like the Roaders offense just took off. So I'd expect big things from Hill Alexander.
And then that's a very good point, Kevin. And I think that he will be a guy that is going to be a difference maker for this club. Let's move on to talk a little bit, staying in the East Division, Kevin. Milwaukee gets two victories over Lake Country over the weekend. The Sunday's game is postponed until July 31st, but very solid performance. 25 hits and 74 at-bats for this team, score 20 runs in the two contests, come away with a huge victory on opening night for them. A club I think both of us expected to be first or second in this division, and they served notice that that trip to the championship series was not a fluke last year.
And let's not discount the fact that it's against a Lake Country team that, frankly, has not performed well in the field, because if you remember last year, Lake Country really took it to the Milkmen, especially at Wisconsin Brewing Company Park. So I thought it was really good for the Milkmen to go make a statement early and go, if you want to call it, on the road when they're playing up just miles away from their home ballpark, but go on the road and get a couple of early defining victories.
Saturday, Ryan Zimmerman tosses a fantastic gem for this club. Five shutout innings, allows two hits and two walks while striking out five. The bullpen took care of the rest of it. They come away with a 3-0 victory. Ryan Zimmerman's been a guy we've liked, Kevin. We've got to watch him since year one of his professional career. And another guy that has had hard times at points during his career. But, boy, if he could be a top one or two guy in this rotation, Milwaukee's going to be very tough this season.
Well, I thought it was interesting as I was looking at Milwaukee's roster. This is Zimmerman's sixth season in the American Association, and his classification is an LS3. So to have a guy with that much experience in this league, knows everything about every ballpark, there's nothing that's going to surprise him. To have that guy on your team and have him as only an LS3, I think that's huge. It's almost like having an extra veteran at this point. And I believe he got married during the off season, so he's now a married man. So maybe with that will come even better statistics.
Both the Chicago Dogs and Gary Southshore Railcats come away with a 2-1 out of the weekend. Both clubs lose their opening contest. Then Gary comes back with a fantastic performance on Friday with a huge shutout victory. Then went on Saturday as well. The one series that really jumped out for me, Kevin, was the way that Chicago rallied after a tough 5-3 loss on opening night. They shut out Lincoln on Saturday 5-0, and then battled back twice, forcing extra innings after they were down by 3 on Sunday in the 9th. Then win after they were trailing by 2 in the 10th inning. Still come away with a victory. Yeah, I was the guy who put the Dogs at the bottom of this division, but boy, they were trying to put me in my place, I think, this weekend.
They showed some heart, especially in that win on Sunday afternoon. I was tuned in to that later in the game, and you know, we were wondering what kind of impact Josh Allman was going to have with this ball club, and he showed it right away with a huge 3-run homer that erased a 6-3 deficit and got the game into extra innings. So, you know, that like Altman's already paying off dividends for the Dogs, and his mother was there to watch it. So that, you know, with it being Mother's Day, that made it even more special. So, you know, you may not have the sluggers you've had there before, but you know, I got a feeling the Dogs will still have a pretty potent lineup that will put up some runs.
Now you're watching Friday night's game between Lake Country and Milwaukee, or at least monitoring that game as it's going along. And you reach out to me to say, boy, that Lake Country team looks like they're in a bit of trouble. 17-4 loss on Friday, then lose 3-0 on Saturday. I realize very early in the season here, but I think if you're a Lake Country fan, you're probably thinking, man, here we go again.
Well, I think it's a natural trigger response. When I was doing the post game with Brad Allred on Thursday afternoon, I said, you know, baseball is just like any other of the four major sports where for some reason in fans' heads, there's always an extra emphasis on opening day. Even though it's just one game of what's going to be 100 for the year, there's always if you don't win on opening day, you're like, oh boy, this might be a long year. So yeah, you have to still be able to keep everything in perspective, but I just think it's instinct to think, okay, what's wrong here if you don't have a good showing to start the season.
Probably a little bit of a concern too when your guy who opened up the season for you on the hill goes on the disabled list right off the bat too, as Evan Krasinski placed on the injured list today, effective back to May 13th. But you know, this is a guy who was going to be your number one starter and already on the DL for you. So that, you know, a little concern I would assume for Lake Country fans out there, but I still think this is a pretty solid club out there. So don't get too hung up on that right now. That's what I would say. I did want to mention, coming back to Chicago here for a minute, Kevin, that they signed outfielder General MacArthur on Sunday. I love that name. I mean, that's for old people like you and I, that's just a great name there, I would say.
General MacArthur the Fourth. I look at that today and like, is this some kind of prank? And you know, folks like Rob and I, if you know us, you think General MacArthur, we always think of MASH, and General MacArthur was the general during the Korean War that everyone just went into a panic at the 4077th that General MacArthur was going to be paying a visit.
Yes. So, I love that name, though. It's one of my two favorite names from this week. We'll come back to the second one here in just a moment. So pretty exciting there for the club. So happy for him to be joining that Chicago Dogs club out there. Let's shift out to the West, Kevin, and no bigger series this past weekend than what Sioux City did to Kansas City. And we'll begin with the negative first. We talked to Dan about this a little bit, but 7 hits for the Monarchs in that series, no extra base hits. Walked 8 times in those 3 games. I realize that Sioux City staff was good, but man, that was embarrassing. I'm just going to use that word.
Well, let's look at it too. That it seemed like the weather was okay on Saturday night, But Sunday, it looked like it was a little cool, a little windy, a little wet. And, you know, there's some hitters that they just don't perform well until the weather gets warmer. And I can think of Yan Hernandez as being one of those type of hitters. So, you know, as when we're talking with Dan, what Steve Montgomery said, they might have caught the Monarchs at the right time. But so, you know, huge three wins for the Explorers.
Pretty solid pitching performance out of the Kansas City Monarchs this weekend, though, despite losing all three of those games. One game was a little bit of a blowout for the team, but they lose 10-1, they lose 7-0, then they battle back to 2-1. So got better on Sunday after a tough doubleheader on Saturday, and I think this is going to be a team that's going to need solid pitching early on if they're going to weather this difficult part for this offense right now.
I thought the KC Royals product Finnegan threw really well for them, and it was probably a blessing for the Explorers that he didn't go more than five innings.
I agree with you completely, because he was untouchable and could be the first guy out the door here in the American Association this season. He looked very good and has the right pedigree out there, so he might get a legitimate shot of getting back to affiliate ball here pretty soon. The remainder of this division, Kevin, before we talk about Sioux City and Fargo, out there in the East, again, early on in the season, four teams above 500. Right now, the bottom four teams in this West division at 3-10 right now, as Winnipeg and Lincoln are both at 1-2, Sioux Falls at 1-3, and Kansas City at 0-3 right now through the early part of the season. And that's opening the door for Fargo and Sioux City to do some stuff here early on. Fargo goes 2-1 this weekend, Sioux City with a 3-0 start. If you look at those four teams down there in the bottom of the division, I didn't really look at this and think, wow, this is a kind of a trouble thing, because of the fact of who they were playing. You know, I thought every one of these teams played a very tough opponent and just had a bad weekend.
You know, especially, too, the Fargo-Moorhead-Kane County series. I listened to the first game in that series driving back from Sioux Falls on Thursday night, and I think Jack Michaels nailed it perfectly. It sounded, you know, I obviously wasn't able to watch, just listening, but, you know, just from what I could get from Jack's call of the game and just from the feel of it, it seemed like it was a playoff game. And, geez, I mean, it's opening night of the season. For some reason, when those two teams play, and it was one of the things I mentioned in my Sunday Insider that you can find at 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com, it always seems like when those two teams match up, Kane County and Fargo-Moorhead, there's no real, like, long-term rivalry between the two clubs. But there's always good games between them, and I thought Thursday night was no different, as Fargo finally pulled away from Kane County in the 10th inning with a big home run from Carell Prime.
For Lincoln, Kevin, could have very easily come away from this weekend 2-1. I think the big news that I watched, and this was a guy I was expecting to have a phenomenal season. Stephon Ward had just really, really struggled for this club. And I would think if your manager, Brett Jody, looking over there in that bullpen, you have to be a little concerned about how Moore has looked early on.
Well, also, you know, the thing I would be concerned about, too, is Matt Cronin seems to be the guy they're looking at to be the ninth inning man there. And it was Cronin that gave up the 3-run lead in the ninth inning and then got in trouble in the 10th. So, you know, it's they're relievers and they're built to have short memories. And if you're a Salt Dogs fan, you're just hoping that this was just a blip on the radar and not a trend.
My second favorite transaction of the week, though, Kevin, Zane Zerbrug signed by Lincoln. I mean, how many people do you come across with a Z for both names? I mean, that's just pretty awesome, I think.
There's something really wrong. You don't have that kind of name and then get nicknamed Bobby or something.
Exactly right. Exactly. And we'll finish up here with Sioux City nice 3-0 week. Sweep Kansas City, a huge rival. You get outstanding pitching. I mean, just phenomenal pitching out of this group. And I think if you're an Explorers fan, where you didn't really know what kind of team you're going to have, I still don't think this team is going to be great offensively. They're going to be okay. I think it's going to be, you know, a middle of the pack team. But boy, that pitching staff looked like it doesn't matter what that offense looked like. They've got business handled.
They did, but on, you know, on the offensive side, of a guy that Dan mentioned, Vince Fernandez, I just thought the guy was a wrecking crew, especially in that doubleheader on Saturday night. And I, you know, he's not a guy that many of us, well, any of us talked about on the season preview last week. But boy, he made a pretty good impact in that doubleheader on Saturday night.
If I remember correctly, 5 total hits on Saturday. So very solid performance by him for sure. And as you know, Dan said, he may not be there for very long. So enjoy him while you can, Explorers fans, because he looks like he's a legitimate guy to get himself into a Philly ball. Well, that takes us through the American Association for this week. As I mentioned earlier, right now it is Fargo leading Winnipeg 10-4 here in the bottom of the eighth. As it looked like they're about to pull out a huge victory. The season will continue on with new series starting on Tuesday. That Winnipeg-Fargo series will continue. Cleveland travels to Milwaukee, Kevin. I think that's going to be a very fun series, a potential Eastern Finals preview for us here.
No doubt about it, Dan. It's, you know, it's not a three-game quickie, though. You know, those guys are going to get to know each other pretty good over the next 6 days. So I know it's only the second series of the year, but I think that's a huge series already.
I think another huge series, Kevin, Chicago travels to Kane County. These guys were bitter rivals to the end of the regular season last year. I think both expected they were going to square off in the second round of the playoffs, and both of them were bounced out there. So lost expectations, I think, for both teams, and both looking to get some momentum going early on.
I really like the fact that, you know, these two teams were battling back and forth second half of the season last year. And, you know, with the close proximity between the two ball clubs, it's good to see that they're having a healthy on-field rivalry. And you hope that in the stands, it's that Chicago fans are making the trip to Geneva and vice versa, going back to Rosemont. So I think it's good for the league.
Jumping out here to the Atlantic League, the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs have an 11-4 record and leading the North Division by 3 games right now, as 3 teams in that division are above 500. In the South Division, the High Point Rockers at 13-3 off to a very quick start, just 2.5 games ahead of both Gastonia and Lexington, who have also played very well. The bottom two teams in this division really struggling right now, 3-10 for Charleston, 3-13 for Frederick. News out there in the Atlantic League. Let me see if I have any other things I want to mention. I don't think that there was, and there wasn't. That then takes us on to the Frontier League. They named their player and pitcher of the week, Gabe Holt of the Grizzlies, winds up being the player of the week. Pitcher of the week is Luis Perez. I believe it was out of Schaumburg, if I remember correctly out of this. Yeah, let me check. Yeah, it was. Okay. Pitcher of the week. So congratulations to both of them. And their divisions out there, they're just 3 games into the season as well. A lot of teams at 2-1 leading. No undefeated team in the Frontier League right now. So already everybody with at least one loss. And we have a lot of news out there, Kevin. You know, I have to say, I was looking through their transactions the last few days. I mean, I knew that there were a lot of former American Association guys out there, but I mean, it is a huge number of American Association guys. I would probably say at least 100 guys played in the American Association within the last 2 years out there in the Frontier League right now. So clearly they know where to get the very best talent, it sounds like.
And it just makes it easier for, you know, people on the outside of it, like you and I, to follow the league a little closer and have a better understanding of who the talent in the league is, too.
Absolutely. I like that point right there. Our good buddy, though, we do want to say Tom Bates. His team is 2-1 there in the West Division, so tied at the top of the division there with Gateway, Lake Erie, and Schaumburg, who are all at 2-1 right now. I should say, well, as long as there's not any teams that are undefeated, there's also no team that is winless at this point. So that, you know, that makes everybody feel like they're off on the right foot, at least, that everybody has a victory so far. I think that carries us through the rest of independent baseball out there, Kevin. So going back to talking about what's going on out there at the 10th inning stretch, so fans should go out there and start reading about.
Well, yesterday I put out I talked about on the show a few weeks ago. I did a Sunday Insider where went around the American Association, just kind of made some observations, made some notes, talked a bit about my trip out to Sioux Falls last week for my first live American Association opening day since 2019, if you can believe that. And thought it looked pretty well. Thought there was some good info in there. You know, we talked a little bit about prospective spots for American Association expansion. Like I mentioned in the blog, let's not get too excited till the shovel hits the dirt, but you can read up about that out in the blog also. And mention too that it looks like we are in for a good news week this week, as you know, you and I already know where the location is going to be, but we're not going to step on the American Association's toes, as they will announce the location for the All-Star game this week so that fans can start making their hotel reservations and making their plans to head out to the All-Star game and Hall of Fame. The ballots are in for the Hall of Fame, and there will be announcements made on who the next round of inductees will be too. So, you know, when this comes out, maybe the announcement's been already made, but if not, expect something this week from the league.
And we're excited to hear that because, you know, they're trying to get more buzz going on around stuff, and which is a good thing when people talking about your league out there. So they've been a little quiet over the last few weeks, and so it's good to see we're getting them with some news, and I'm pretty excited about where the All-Star game will be. Go ahead.
And I think where it's going is there's going to be a lot of excitement around it, a lot to do in the area. And I just, you know, I think it's a good setting for that sort of event. So it's going to be good for the good showcase for the league.
You know, Kevin, I think one of the things to consider is that you have 12 really well-populated areas right now in the American Association that would be great hosts for any All-Star. I mean, it's not like, and please excuse fans of any of these areas if you're offended by this, but, you know, if they would have had an All-Star game in Joplin 4 or 5 years ago, or even if you kind of looked at Amarillo, which is a decently sized town, but and if you've been to Amarillo, it's not the hotbed of super excitement things going on around, except for if you're directly on Interstate 40 there. But, man, I mean, you could be anywhere in the American Association right now and have the All-Star game, and it would be a great place to have a game. I mean, there's lots of fun stuff to do around the ballparks and great atmosphere around there. And so this is 12 great locations right now, I think. So we're excited.
I knew you were either going to mention, as you're getting ready to make this point, I thought, is he going to mention Joplin? And you didn't let me down. I even think back to when
I probably let Joplin down.
I think back to the early days too of the revived American Association when the St. Joe Black Snakes were around for 2 or 3 years too, and as let's face it, it was kind of a stopgap team until just so there's a even number of teams in the league.
Yeah, so very solid things out there. We're even kind of excited because we know that pretty soon here we're going to be talking about some expansion. So I think we're, you know, maybe we're looking at 2 or 3 or 4 teams next year or within the next few years. I know the league has been very smart about ensuring they got solid ownership groups out there, great ballparks to play in. Because, you know, Kevin, a few years ago, there was all kinds of talk about Fort Worth trying to get back into the league and Grand Prairie. I don't honestly know what's going on with that cricket league thing they were trying to put together down there, but you know, that's always a potential location. And you think, well, man, what could these guys get back in the league? And would the league want to just open the door to cities because they had been traditional markets for the league? But they've been very smart and very methodical about this. So I think in a year or two or three, when we have some expansion teams here in the league, I think it's really going to make this league even stronger.
No doubt, Dan. As Josh Schaub was on the broadcast with Brett Allred during the fifth inning, it's, you know, it's not going to just stop at adding three or four new teams. I think they're going to, as long as everybody's on solid ground, they just see this league getting bigger and bigger as the years go on.
Yeah, you got to think there's some states out there that they really could get a market in it. Despite the fact of there being, you know, Oklahoma City and Tulsa, that doesn't mean you can't have an Oklahoma City American Association team, huge enough market to be able to handle two baseball teams there. There's some fairly good-sized cities out there still in Oklahoma that haven't been touched yet. Texas is just an enormous state right now. And, man, they could probably fit 10 teams in that state if they really wanted to. So there's definitely markets. You could go east towards Kentucky and Tennessee. You could go a little bit more west and try to stretch out in Nebraska areas like that. So I think we're going to see I wouldn't be surprised to see 24 teams in this league within 10 years. I think that's pretty much of a – I'm doubling the size of the league, but I think that's potentially something that could occur. So no information. I'm just throwing that out.
And as excited as one could be about that, I think from the perspective that you and I have is like, how in the heck are we going to be able to keep up on the players and games and everything if they have 24 teams in this league? Maybe by then we'll have called it a career and just move on to be a fan in the stands just like anybody else. But wow, that would be quite the chore for you and I.
We're up to the task, though, Kevin. We can do it out there. Before we jump into the final thought here tonight, Kevin, you were live to watch this. I watched a lot of games this weekend. Your thoughts on the pitch clock and how well it worked?
Well, I think we saw it in fine form in Sioux Falls as the Canaries and Railroaders got things wrapped up in 2 hours and 6 minutes. And I know from watching other games on TV, there were a few scattered instances where batters were called for strikes for not being ready in the box, and also pitchers got called for balls for not getting the ball delivered on time. But I know, I think as the batters will get that figured out, adjust their routines at the plate, and I think eventually we're not going to even notice the clocks are there. I saw it in AAA last year. Once they were used to it, it wasn't a factor at all. And you know, and I think too, the one of the things is even getting these, I don't remember where I heard it, but I know they were talking about there's been inconsistencies amongst the ballparks and what the time spans are supposed to be. And, you know, it's going to take a while for those pitch clock operators, too, to get in a groove also. But I think when all the kinks get worked out and all the players are used to it, I don't even think we're going to even notice it. Only place it might be noticed is at the beer line.
Well, I was watching just game times over the weekend, and I realized that Saturday's contest between Cleburne and Sioux Falls ran 3:51. I get that 19:12. You're clearly a lot of runs scored in that game. But I even looked at 18:05 Cleburne won on Friday, where there was 35 hits in that contest, and I thought to myself, that would have been a 3-hour 48-minute game last year. Finished in 2:54. I thought that was a real testament to how well this game went. And as you mentioned, they had a few instances in that game where they had guys that were called for pitch clock violations. But, you know, for a fan, you got to watch all 23 runs and be out of the ballpark in 3 hours. I thought that's what they really want. And they got it accomplished this weekend. So Hopefully this will get even better and make for some entertaining stuff for us out there. So I liked it. I think that's it for us, Kevin. So how about our great Kevin Luco final thought?
Well, my final thought is something I alluded to in the blog, and that is Fargo-Moorhead is going to retire the number 33 of former manager Doug Simonic on, I believe, June 9th, if I can get my mental calendar
correct.
Lined up. Something I thought was long due. I realize, you know, you hear stuff here and there that the departure of Simonic from Fargo-Moorhead may not have been the smoothest transition. There may have been a lot of hurt feelings along the way, but I'm glad they thought, you know what, it's been so many years removed. They've won a championship since then. Let's do the right thing and recognize someone that has meant everything to the Red Hawks organization. Not to mention, you know, he was one of the six managers that got the league going in 1993. He got the Winnipeg Gold Eyes franchise going in 94-95. Won a championship with the Gold Eyes in 1994. So I'm glad to see his number 33 will be forever retired by the Red Hawks, and hope that the Simonic family will enjoy the weekend in Fargo catching up with old friends. So congratulations to Doug Simonic. I know that there are some fans out there that are like, oh, damn Doug Simonic. You know, he was a fiery character. He was a polarizing figure. But I can tell you from personal experience, if you crack the shell and get to know the person really good, you're going to find he's a great baseball man, and he's someone that has always been about his players and been about making baseball a better game.
You know, and one of the things that I think needs to be kept in the whole perspective about this is that before the season began and they had announced this, Jack Michaels had reached out to me because I had been talking about all of the great managers in the American Association in a set of articles that I've written. And he wanted to know where Doug sat on the list of all-time independent manager victories, because I had done a little research on that to do the articles I'd written on. And he's at number two, sitting just behind Butch Hobson at this point. And, you know, that's a lot of victories, like almost 1,300. I mean, that's just crazy, that number of victories right there. And you got to pat a guy on the back for that kind of thing. I mean, you know, most of those came as a Fargo-Moorhead Red Hawk. And whether you like the guy or not, he earned you a lot of victories. So brought a lot of great players to there. You got to watch a lot of great guys in Red Hawks uniforms out there. So that was Doug Simonic who made those things happen. And you even look at the great tradition here, Chris Coast. That's a Doug Simonic guy. You know, so,
no doubt.
Well deserving.
And I'm hoping, you know, I've been campaigning for it. I'm hoping that we will soon see Doug Simonic in the American Association Hall of Fame too. But you know, if I put it out there, we'll see what comes of it.
I think that's a great thought. We have to try to see if we can get him on the show. That'd be quite a feat. But I'm going to see if I can make that happen. Doug Simonic on This Week in the Association. We'll see if we can make that happen. How about that?
I tell you, we could break some records with that because, you know, the curious thing, when Simonic left Fargo in 2017, we just, you know, always were thinking, okay, Milwaukee's coming in the team league in 2019. Are we going to see Simonic running them? Are we going to see Simonic, he was an East Coast guy. Is he going to wind up managing team off there? We never saw him manage again. And I was genuinely surprised by that he's just pretty much faded into the background. And I would love to have a chance to have him on the show and just to reminisce about, you know, the players and the seasons and the, you know, his days in the Northern League and American Association. That would just be a blast. So, Rob, you get that done. I think we've got a heck of a show on our hands.
Challenge accepted. I'm going to see if I can make that happen. So that'd be fantastic. In the meantime, Kevin and I want to once again thank Dan Vaughn for joining us this week. Next week, we'll be back with a new guest for us and talk more about what's going on around the American Association. So for Kevin Luco, I'm Rob Pannier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.